to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ali. Mr. Brendan Carnan. She's AV and Angelica Vasenko. Angelica Vasenko on the board. Did I get it right, finally?
Yes, you got it.
S&P futures down 10 and a quarter. They were down a little bit more than that a little bit ago. Dow futures down 105. NASDAQ futures down 33.75. This is after we kind of leaked down into the close yesterday. We were down just a little bit yesterday, but then we headed south into the close. One of the bigger movers was Apple down $4. So, little bit of a concern, I think, Brennan, with the Chinese talking about maybe getting U.S. tech stuff out of their government, because we're thinking about doing that here, obviously, with Huawei and so forth. And anyway, sort of strange stuff. Articles of impeachment might be, the first two might come out today. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but I don't know. We'll see how that works out. I really do hope, although I'm worried about my $1 bet now that they were going to cut back to just a nasty censure. It appears that's probably not going to happen right now.
Did you really put a bet on the fact that they'd go back to a censure at this point?
$1.
You're a high roller there.
Well, with several people. I think that there's a lot of people that are running. I think they think it's too close to the election. I think there's a lot of reasons to just... Plus, to me, it as much as anybody who listens knows, he's not my favorite creature. But it's just it's a long string of things that you don't necessarily want in a president. Now, there's a lot of good things I think the man's done too. But it's a constant behavioral issue. To me, it's not a high crime. We're too close to the election. I think the fact that there is no tape, all we're going to do is fight about what one person heard versus a transcript and a doctored transcript. And that, depending on what side you're on, you're just going to take that side. There's nothing here. There's not a smoking gun. There's not the tape. And that's the reason why there hasn't been a tape in 50 years, right?
Mm-hmm. Ever since the time of Nixon.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the reason why there's no tape. So you can't prove anything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether that's kosher or not, I'd say probably not, but I don't know what you can do about that, other than say, this time going forward, maybe we'll actually use a regular tape instead of 50 people listening. I'm stunned, though, that out of the 20-some other people listening on the phone, or wherever it was, I read that article, I'm sort of stunned that not one person has a tape, given the world we live in.
Well, I'm a little bit surprised about that, too. But, you know, I think it's a really interesting gamble on both sides, on both the sides of the Republicans and the Democrats moving forward at this point, the way that they're moving forward. I keep hearing the argument that you don't want to disturb the election that's coming up. But when you have somebody who abuses power, and for the sake of argument, we'll assume that he's abused power in what he has done. How long do you wait for that to happen? Now, I also want to just posit to you and get your thoughts on a different theory. You know, there's been a lot of talk that the Democrats are losing ground in the field of public opinion on this, and that it's not going to go well for the Democrats in November because of this. My theory is, though, to posit for discussion, that once Trump is emboldened, once he is acquitted at the Senate level and not removed from office, and I'm taking the tack here that he will be impeached by a majority vote in the House of Representatives on a purely partisan line. There'll be no Republicans voting for him to be impeached. It goes to the Senate where he's acquitted, perhaps with a couple of senators, but unlikely to have any Republican senators vote for removal. At which point Trump gets more emboldened and goes further over the edge in abuse of power between now and November to the point where he screws himself from being reelected.
Well, it's certainly a possibility, but I don't, I don't, I, I think the guy abuses power every chance he gets.
I agree.
And I think a lot of them do. I mean, by the way, what came out this morning, I got a chance to check it out. I think it just came out this morning, some report of how much all the administrations lied to us about Afghanistan.
Yeah. That news broke yesterday. I haven't had a chance to read a whole lot up on that. But, yes, some of the generals are now saying that they didn't know what they were doing, that there was no real guidelines and policy, and that they were actually losing the war, and they didn't understand why that was happening.
Without calling for, like, an armed revolution, which I would never do, unless we were all armed with water balloons, not water cannon, water balloons, this is now I guess you go back to Grenada, I don't know. This is now two essentially wars in a row, where the Iraq, I'll use the term fiasco, where several years later the British came out with their report, you know, just absolutely just roasting the British people for following the Americans. It seemed they didn't know what they were doing, had no view what the government would look like after Saddam was tossed, that Rumsfeld and Cheney spent more time worrying about the oil companies that were going to take over the oil afterward than actually worried about who's going to govern the place. And now we've got the Afghanistan situation. Can we ever possibly have some sober people? Can we get a Daniel Inouye or somebody like that still alive? Can we have some kind of a sit-down in Congress or maybe with a couple of Supreme Court judges and say, what the F? What are we doing here? We got people running around with one leg and so forth in the lakefront. Mm-hmm. I mean, what are we doing here? Mm-hmm. Who are these people? How are they so inept, and how are they there?
Well, whether they're inept or whether they're whether they have a skewed view of what they want to try to accomplish, I think is the question.
I mean, I think you can be the one board I was on, Brennan, the CBOE board. I'm going to say whoever had the line on a camel is a horse designed by committee.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you that on an individual basis, there was really nobody on the board there that I didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't think that actually cared something about the place. I mean, a lot of them had their own agenda first, but some of the decisions we made were incredibly stupid.
Yep.
Incredibly stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And it went to time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what is it about a collection of people make some of the dumbest decisions? You know, I mean, we had one of the great lines, we had this grumpy old engineer at Pullman. And of course, we had a schedule for our Boston cars. And all of a sudden, the governor of Boston says, we haven't had a railroad car in so many years. I really would like one ready for the election.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now that would have been, you know, 4 or 5 months before we were supposed to build the first car. So at the time, the contract was supposed to be for 60 cars, but they only signed up for 25 out of the gate, and we're going to add the other 35, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it basically essentially puts pressure on us. If you really want those other 35, you better get me a car, like, you know, 4 months in advance. So the main drawing, the first thing you do on a railroad car, is more than anybody wants to know, probably, but the main drawing, can you guess what's the main drawing on a railroad car?
I don't know.
It's the undercar arrangement drawing. Where it's an upside down drawing where you go, this is where the brakes go, this is where this goes, this is where the compressors go, this is where blah, blah, blah. You know, it's air conditioners that are down there, whatever it is, it's where everything goes on the bottom of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually your best guy, and he does it himself. Because there's no way you can put more than one person on this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually one of your senior engineers. First thing he does, here's the undercar arrangement drawing. He passes it out. And all of a sudden, now you know your air conditioner's got to be this size, you know it's got to be that size, and everybody scurries from there. And so they say to the guy, or the doofuses, says to the, I forget what the guy's name, which is big, big, grumpy guy, he goes, can you put like 3 or 4 guys on that undercar arrangement drawing and hurry it up? He says, well, yeah, I could do that. Same way, if I wanted a baby in 1 month, I'd go and have sex with 9 girls. He kind of looks at him and goes, oh, well, I guess not, huh? I mean, it's somewhat of the same, you know, kind of the same, but you wonder, I don't understand how You know what Trump has taught me, amazingly, is how little bit there seems to be there that's actually codified, how much of it is practice, how much of it you can. I was appalled when we went and got the guy from, what was the dude he killed 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago? The guy from ISIS. Anyway.
Oh, that's al-Baghdadi?
Yeah. Where Trump says, I don't trust Congress, so I only told Putin and the Assad.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, wait a minute. You mean to tell me there's no, I'm sure it's not in the Constitution, but there's no requirement someplace that this dude has to tell Congress if they're gonna do something like that before he tells like an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why would you pick he trusts Putin? I mean, conceptually.
Well, he seems to.
No, but conceptually, you have to have a feeling. I've said this before. You have to have a mentality. I believe. You have to have a mentality that says, I may not like the person who's in the double secret committee of, you know, of whatever kind of affairs, military affairs that not everybody knows about. What's that you call that? You know what I'm talking about. There's two committees that actually review the stuff that nobody's supposed to know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, the people who rise to the top in those committees, you would think, are people you can sort of trust.
Well, yeah.
It's not up to you.
You can trust them as long as they're your party and the people that you installed, but that doesn't happen.
But I'm saying it, no matter what it is, there should be a person in there. And I would say, you know, there's been Republican guys and Democratic guys like, I always pick a poll named Dan Inouye or even McCain or
mm-hmm.
some of those guys. Or even if they're the other party, they know once you get into that spot, this is real crap. This is mm-hmm. not. And you can't just unilaterally say, they're both Democrats, I don't trust them, and totally truncate the process, I don't think. It's like, well, Congress is Democrat, I'm Republican, or Congress is Republican, I'm Democrat, I get to just pass laws without them doing it. I mean, mm-hmm. you don't get to do that, I don't think. But obviously, he feels that he can. Now, to me, that's more of a constitutional problem than, you know, dealing with all the idiots over all the various and sundry thieves that are over in Ukraine.
But this is not a new problem with this administration and this president or this Congress. I mean, this what we're seeing right now is a direct link to what happened. Even going back to the time of Roosevelt, FDR is trying to seek presidential power during the Great Depression. It continued, especially during the Kennedy and Johnson years, through Nixon. And all the way up to today, where Congress, overall Congress, more importantly the Senate than the House, because I think the Senate has more power and authority under our government than the House does, ceding power to the presidency because they don't want to make the hard decisions. And they want to have a political...
And they also can't move fast enough.
Well, they cannot move fast enough. And for a long time, they had the 60-vote rule that for a lot of changes and rules changes, you had to have 60 votes in the Senate to affect changes and rules. But there's more ceding to the president than maintaining it in the House or in the Senate. And as a result, the presidents have become more emboldened to do more and more.
Well, Cheney and Rumsfeld actually believe that it should be an imperial presidency.
Well,
too.
That's true. And a lot of aides. In fact, that's one of the main premises right now of William Barr in his position as Attorney General. And some of the current justices on the Supreme Court are the same thing. More and more of an imperial presidency. And by the way, this theory of giving more power, ceding more power to the president, goes to the separation of powers provisions in the Constitution as well, and how
the
Supreme Court is talking about
it. You only pull the Constitution when it's on your side.
Well, that's right. and you know, the justices, many times the justices don't want to make a decision right now because they think that it's a legislative purpose. And that really was also part of the decision in the Mueller report, that he or the Department of Justice could not bring charges against a sitting president. It really was the role of Congress to impeach and remove if there was a crime that had been committed.
How is that blurred if the crime took place during the campaign?
During the campaign?
He wasn't president yet when he did the... Let's say there was a crime.
According to the interpretation of the DOJ, and certainly the feeling of the current Attorney General, then once a man or woman enters the presidency, he or she is immune from prosecution or even investigation of a crime.
As long as they're Republican.
As long as they're in office and as long as they agree with you.
As long as they agree with him.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I would say that, that's what I'm saying. I don't know a lot of this stuff, even attorney-client privilege. This guy's tossed every ball in the air. Now, maybe we end up healthier for it someday that all these balls were in the air, but we're not having, I wouldn't exactly call it healthy debate.
Mm-hmm. No, this is not a healthy debate, and it's also incredulous to me, some of the things that are being said, especially from those legislators who were also in office and on the floor in 1998 or whatever it was that Clinton was impeached. And if you listen to some of the things that these guys said then, and so far it's just been men. So I'm saying guys because, it's people like Lindsey Graham and there are a few others who have been around at the time of the Clinton impeachment, not talking about the actual crime or activities of the president at that time, but the concept of what it means to impeach and when you can impeach and what they're saying now is completely antithetical to the two statements. I don't know how you can get the two to even be anywhere near in the same realm.
I want to ask you a simpler question, along the same line. Do these people that are in Congress, do they think it's 1904 or something?
You mean because they can say something and not get caught?
Yeah.
Or not have any tapes?
Yeah.
It sure seems that way.
But does Lindsey Graham not know that everything he said back, how many years it was, 22 years ago or whatever it was, is still there? That mm-hmm. people will play one against the other, like mm-hmm. Saturday Night Live or something?
Yeah.
I mean, they don't know, they don't care, they're so arrogant. I don't know what it is.
I do think a lot of it is arrogance. And they're twisting themselves up into pretzels both ways. I mean, and I'm, Lindsey Graham is probably the most egregious
the president's got something on him, in my opinion. I don't
know. I've got a theory on that, too, but you're right. Yeah. There's actually something there that I...
To me, it looks like a Denny Hastert situation. I sure hope not for the same reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, I agree. There has to be something going on there that may or may not come out sometime in the future, but, boy, I just don't know what happened, what alien took over the body of Lindsey Graham.
Yeah, I don't... It's amazing to me. Hey, did you, just a quick, I probably should have waited for Jeff, but did you see the thing about the burial of the guy in the Arizona this weekend? I can't stop thinking about that.
I'm sorry, what?
Some guy was buried in the Arizona battleship.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I heard about that. He was a Pearl Harbor survivor, and and he recently died, and they interned his ashes on the Arizona.
And one of the three survivors of the Utah is going to have his done there, too.
I thought they were restricting. I thought I saw in the article that the guy whose ashes were interred in the Arizona was the last one they were going to do that for. But maybe they were talking about the Arizona.
There's three guys left, mm-hmm. and all three of them are on record as saying they're going to be buried with their family here.
Mm-hmm.
But there's three guys from the Utah that are left, and one of the guys says, I went on the Utah.
Hmm. Okay.
So it'll be the last on the Arizona, but not the last on the Utah.
Mm-hmm.
Man, if you were there, how could you possibly have a dry eye?
I don't know.
Gotta be.
I don't know.
What, the entire band is on the ship, right? None mm-hmm. of the band members escaped, yeah. I don't believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was amazing. It's been 78 years.
Yeah.
78 years last Saturday.
It really, it's not that long ago when you think about it.
No.
When the world was talk about a different place.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And,
well, even the military power of the United States, we were not very highly ranked in the world with military power until Pearl Harbor.
Well, right, but we ended up, there was an awful lot that went into, one of the most interesting books that I've ever read was George Marshall's Soldier and Statesman. I mean, when you talk about the, impeachable offenses and those kinds of things that Roosevelt mm-hmm. did, it really is and I'll even give, I'll lob this one to Trump. There's stuff going on that you know about as president that you can't, I was going to say tweet out or talk about. but I mean, there are things that are going down in the world And he knew more about what was going on in Nazi Germany than most people.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a feeling we were going to be somewhere. And even though we didn't have the money, Congress was isolationist and didn't want to pass the money, there was a lot of stuff he did, really, through George Marshall in the late 30s that put us a lot closer to war than we're not. We're much more along the path than people thought.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of making people retire, get rid of the peacetime generals, that sort of thing. Bring new people. In terms of the ranks, there was a lot of stuff done in the 36, 37, 38, 39 that maybe a lot of people didn't pick up on.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of research into planes and tanks and so forth, even though didn't have the money to make them. In other words, there was a little bit, and the Germans made tremendous amounts of mistakes. I mean, when he decided he wanted to go into Poland, they all thought they were a year too soon.
Mm-hmm.
And the general's like, "What are you doing?"
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of mistakes made. I mean, let's face it, we lucked out a couple of times. We would have, I don't know that if we didn't win the Battle of Midway, if there wouldn't have been some kind of a peace where the, look at Vietnam, where the mm-hmm. Japanese, we just said to the Japanese, you take what you got and we'll, don't go any further, and we'll cut it off here. I mean,
that's right. There was a lot of appeasement in the discussions leading up to World War II, and I agree with you that Roosevelt manipulated the system too, like the Lend-Lease program to give equipment and war supplies to the British, even though he wasn't permitted to sell them. He came up with the idea of Lend-Lease for them.
Well, we were also talking about ships that could barely run.
Mm-hmm.
And we did have, our trade was going to them, and do we want our ships being shot up? I mean, there was nothing illegal with us trading with Britain, and did we want our ships shot up along the way by torpedoes? The answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
So, there was no doubt where this was heading.
Yeah.
And obviously he knew that. And how much do you tell people? I mean, they were really pretty tough times mm-hmm. for all concerned.
Oh, and I believe that the president has to withhold information, a lot of the information, just for national security reasons. I don't trust the judgment of the current administration.
No, I don't. And I think we, how can I put it in such a way where it's non-denominational? I think we're in a situation where the skill set needed to become president isn't necessarily the skill set you want in the job.
Well, I think it's unusual, too. I think when you're looking at how people run for office, especially for the presidency, you're right. It's a different skill set to get elected than to legislate. And it's, I think it's worse for the country right now.
Well, I mean, when you talk about people who could conceivably run, and I'm not taking a shot at Mike Bloomberg. I mean, clearly the guy on the domestic front and domestic economy front, I mean, he's probably as good as you're going to get. But you start talking about, should Oprah run?
Mm-hmm.
No. I mean, it's, and the reason why I say this, Brendan, I don't know how you codify it, because everybody's different. When I was at the CBOE, there was sort of a, well, earlier, afterward, I don't, who knows, but there was somewhat of a pecking order. When I say there was a pecking order, I use the term career path, to get in, I won't say power, because it never felt like you were in power. But when you became a member, most guys are just struggling to make a living, blah, blah, blah. I like the fact that you get out at 3 o'clock. And then and somewhere along the line, somebody decides, well, I better give back. I'll get on a committee.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So somebody gets on a committee. He not only gets on a committee, he or she, but they show up, do some work. If you're on membership, all of a sudden the chairman feels comfortable giving you one of the harder envelopes to go through or harder folders. That kind of stuff starts to happen. And all mm-hmm. of a sudden you're on another committee, and maybe you're a floor official, and all of a sudden somebody goes, gee, this Brendan guy, not only is he on three committees, he's like vice chairman of one of them, and he always shows up, and he's always seeming to taking the extra effort. Then they're starting to think about you maybe being a board nominee down the road
mm-hmm.
from the floor. And once in a while we'd have a floor meeting, a meeting of all the members, and somebody, there's a lot of bright guys there, somebody would say something, intelligent, and two guys would go, hey, Joe should be on the board. And I'd sit there and go, no, he shouldn't. And they go, why? Look what he just said. No, I didn't say Joe is an idiot. He's not. I said, but the door hasn't hit him in the ass in the 20 years he's been here.
Mm-hmm.
Other people have spent, you know, 3 hours after work, two nights a week for the last... you know, it's like anything else. It's 90% perspiration and 10% inspiration, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And I think we end up with, you don't just drop into, and we start seeing with the Twitter feeds. In 20 letters, you can be an expert on everything.
Mm-hmm.
No, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm no expert on building bridges. I'm no expert on this, that, and the other thing. I'm no expert on medical stuff. I know where my expertise lands, but everybody else seems to think they're an expert on everything. I don't get that necessarily, but, you know, we are seeing that elsewhere. I mean, and I don't know why that is. We still have the SP futures. They're still down 9.25 now. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here. Right now. Right here. Right now.
Well, I'm up by Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. It's Mr. Brendan Cornan. She's AV on the board. SP Futures down 9. NASDAQ Futures down 30. We're down yesterday as well. Apple's down another $2. It was down $4 yesterday. It was 270. Now it's 260.43. Still in rarefied air, but kind of creeping the other way a little bit. There was a little bit of a comeback yesterday on that. A little bit of a blurb about the Chinese maybe not wanting our stuff in their governmental offices. Says here, the headline is Dow futures drop 100 points after report says U.S.-China trade deal is unlikely this week. I could have told you that, Brendan. But anyway, around the rest of the world, we've got over in Europe, the DAX down 196. That's 1.5%. FTSE down 71, a full 1%. CAC around down 54.9%. So heavy down over there. Nikkei down 20 points. Call that flat. Shanghai up 2. That's call that flat, like 2 days in a row. Hang Seng down 58.2%, so not much action over there. A lot of action in Europe. Bonds. Japanese 10-year backing off just a little, -0.02%, so it can't quite get to the flat line or up, but it's trying. The Bund -0.3, our stuff 1.8, which is sort of where it was yesterday. Gold up $7, 1471. Silver up 8 cents, 1663. Still way off that 17 number was a couple of weeks ago. AV, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Now, before she does sports, I will have to say that I said, by the way, did you watch the Hawks or the Bulls game last night so you could report on it? Did they lose again? Yes, they did. Why did I have to watch? Not so sure that's the attitude the Bulls management wants you to have, but go ahead.
Well, so as we started with the sports, Bulls lost to Raptors, 92-93.
Yeah.
And right now, currently, it's 20 degrees in Chicago, cloudy and chilly early in the morning. Eventually, we're expecting the sun to come out after 10 a.m. The highest will reach 26. Yeah. The lows will dip to 20. And in Phoenix, we have an abundant sunshine, light winds throughout the day. Later at night, we'll get cloudy and slight windy. The highest of the day will be 67 and the lowest 47. In traffic, no accidents reported. But we can track the high traffic volume on Eisenhower Expressway East from Wolf Road to Death Plains. It's about 12 to 15 miles per hour. That's what I got for weather traffic report for now.
Thank you very much.
Chief.
Then we have Joel.
Yes.
Joel, you with us, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. How you doing today?
Doing all right. Tell us what's going on. All this news all of a sudden. Cut it for how are we supposed to trade this? I got a lot of red on my screen this morning.
Well, what do you want to do? You want to go long? You want to go short? What are you doing?
I
want
to long go,
term,
I want to go,
short term? What do you want to talk
I
about?
I only want to go short if it's going down.
Well, you got a pretty good area to lean on if you're thinking of doing that. Wild week last week, right? We sold off, and then we came all the way back to within a whisker of the all-time high. So, you know, if you're a nervous Nelly about, you know, the 2020, you want to take some chips off the table, this is... You're relatively close to all-time highs. Basis the S&P futures. If you have a penchant for shorting here, I mean, it's a lower risk short than it was in the middle of last week. So, I mean, overall, the longer term trend, you can't really fight it, is up. I haven't, this week was a down, yesterday was a down day, today was a down day. We'll see. The market seems to always rebound, but very close to all-time highs. So low risk short, and not a bad place to lighten up on some longs.
There's an article here this morning by Patty Domm, D-O-M-M, CNBC reporter, talking about how there's a lot of put buying a year out, and the put premium is higher than the call premium, which when you go a year out or 2 years out, The whether to put or to call is the higher premium is usually more of an interest rate issue than a volatility issue. Just saying. But we don't ever want to inject any facts into a good story, do we?
No, well, I mean, historically, going into an election year, it's usually a pretty good year for the market. You have factors this year that may abate that. The impeachment process, I think, is the primary, you know, reason that we're long or down today. So, you know, historical patterns indicate, you know, the market usually rises in election years, but we are certainly in a real different environment here. So I, you know, not apples are apples. Apples are oranges here when you're comparing this administration to past administrations.
Now, this headline, Joel, I don't want to go into it. I go into it too much, but the headline is the Fed will stay in hibernation until at least the summer of 2020. I'm going to say, just lob it out there. There's very few things I'll say that I say that are absolutely true.
Yep.
And this is one of them, that the fact that they might not have an interest rate announcement absolutely does not mean they're in hibernation. when they're monkeying with the balance sheet and the money supply, the way they're doing it, there's a lot of stuff they could be doing that's very newsworthy, that is not officially moving an interest rate one way or the other. Just saying.
True. I will not argue with that. The operations, the overnight operations, the repos that went on last month. You know, we're speculating that the banks and larger institutions, you know, just were not comfortable holding the collateral that, you know, they had. Some of these IPOs did collapse. So there are things lurking out that the Fed is doing besides moving interest rates. I mean, Chief, you saw that hot number, right, on Friday? And
yeah.
So rates aren't going up and they're not going down. And I think we've been saying this for quite a long time. It's not going to be an interest rate move that breaks the back of this market. They're not going to ratchet rates up, you know, 3-4 times in a row because it will kill the economy. And the lower they take it when we're in a stable environment, the less opportunity it gives them if things really go wrong. So
I don't think it'll
not move rates in 2020, but I agree with you that they're operations, open market operations that can indicate different things.
I would say that they might not kill the economy to go back to somewhat of a normalized interest rate, but it seems like that the market will not stay at this level unless they're actively feeding it.
It's true. I mean, I don't know how much you can feed it until, it overheats. It doesn't look like, I mean, that was a hot number and stuff, so they're going to stay in pat. I mean, if you're worried about interest rates go, I'm just not worried about going anywhere. I think, you know, we've talked about this before. You know, you had the tech bubble, right? And, in 2000, that brought the market down. Then you had the financial housing crisis in 2008, 2009. The next thing that's going to derail this market, it could be something new. I mean, I don't know what it is, a major epidemic or something, but, something else out there is going to, if and when, going to knock this market off its keister.
It's always ballooning debt that comes home to roost someplace. And one thing that I think you sort of can't argue with, even if you're a total glass full guy, you can't argue with the fact
that
since 2008, all we've done is increase the debt. So in that sense, but I've got 3 months money supply growth 9%. That's unconscionable, Joel. It's in an economy that's growing 2%. And so the idea that the Fed is doing nothing is somewhat, I'd say they're more active than I've ever seen them. Speaking of which, we forgot yesterday, I saw right after the show, Paul Volcker died.
Yep. Mr. Volcker passed away yesterday. Condolences to his family.
Yeah.
Quite the head of the Fed back in his day.
Oh, yeah.
Those rates up. A lot of people thought that was the greatest times when rates were at those levels, but they weren't looking at the corresponding inflation rate and their, you know, real rate of return.
Yeah, first of all, he was a giant of a man physically and mentally. I would say that he, and this is not because, I'm certainly no genius when it comes to economics, but the criticism that I lob at both Milton Friedman and him and a few of the other really giants of the age are I don't think they picked up on the lags in some of these statistics as much as they did, as they should have. And I really do believe, having lived through it, that Volker was, if he had to do it all over again, of course those guys are, most of them, they never made a mistake in their life, right? It's one thing nice about being a trader, because every day, even on your best day, you get punched in the nose. Yeah, you get punched in the nose about 10 times if you're doing 100 trades, right? There's gonna be some clunkers in there, and you just get rid of them as best you can and keep going. And, but I really do believe that, like I said, having lived through it the last year or two, where he was just pounding the economy into the ground and the interest rates to the moon, he didn't have to do that. The CPI numbers, as we're seeing now, I believe, are such a lagging number that he had already killed the inflation 2 years before he stopped beating it. It was already dead. The horse was long dead. And the last 2 years where all the savings and loans went out of business, and they might have been able to survive, you know, a couple of years of 11% rates when you're paying people 10 and you're only getting 6 on the mortgage. But he made it like 4 or 5. I don't think he had to do that.
No,
I think
no,
he could have saved that.
Obviously not, because those SNLs that were scooped up by some of the larger players turned out to be very, very profitable investments. So, yeah, he did add to their demise. We haven't talked. Did we talk sports this week or last week?
No, we need to talk a little bit
about sports, Chief.
How the hell did the Irish not make a? They're in the around the corner bowl. I mean, I thought they'd have done better than that. I mean, I thought they'd be playing Utah or somebody like that, or they're going, or somebody, some other, you know, two loss team that's pretty good, and they're not even close. But now, you know, they didn't deserve much, but still, Michigan's got a nice bowl.
I guess it depends how you look at it. It's nice if we win. It's a tough situation because if we go in and we beat Alabama, then it will be like, well, I guess a lot of their players are may sit out. So they'll say, oh, you beat an undermanned Alabama team. And then if we lose, they'll be like, oh, well, Harbaugh still can't win the big game. So, you know, I think most of our players are going to play. I'm not sure about the Alabama situation. You know, it's a good matchup for TV. It's a good matchup for the Citrus Bowl. But Saban's going to be out for blood. Let's see if he can get those players motivated, you know, after this is really a disappointment for them. But we could talk football, or we could talk basketball. And have you been checking on your boy Juwan Howard and the Wolverines?
Yeah, they're playing well.
They're playing well. Number 5 in the country, got a tough game at Illinois tomorrow night, you know, on the road, and then you got a game against Oregon. But, man, if you want to see a well-coached team, if you're a fan of the big men playing, Howard's doing that. He's got a rotation of about 4 guys, 6'8", 6'10", higher, just working them, just great coaching. So, Mr. Beeline's having a little tough time in Cleveland. I'm sorry to hear about that. But, boy, oh, boy, what a find in Juwan Howard.
Give me about a 30-second, I don't know how State gets so good.
And you know what? That's the same question I've been asking people. I don't even know. I think they have one, Caleb Wesson, I think they have one really good player. They ended up bringing in a good coach after they got rid of, who was that guy, Thad Mata. And I don't know. It's just, you see that, the momentum in schools, you know, they get good in basketball, they attract crews, they get good in basketball. So, yeah, you look at it, Ohio State is 3rd. In the rankings, and then Maryland's 4th, and we're 5th. So,
yeah.
Man, it's going to be a tight Big Ten. But
It's going to be Big Ten all year. Joel, thank you very much, buddy. Talk at you next week.
Ahead.
SP Futures down 10.25. Should be right back, Mr. Kenny Pulcheri. A lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome to Stocks and Jocks. SP Futures down 1075, NASDAQ Futures down 36. We have Kenny. Baby. Not yet. Okay, we were before Joel came on. We were talking a little bit about how this is all going to play out in 2020, and it's funny. We were talking yesterday actually about two subjects. I mean, worldwide economics. Are we slowing? Are we not? We have too much debt. Do we have too much money pouring in? Do we have somewhat inflation? And it's we looked at the jobs number last Friday, and it's interesting. If you look at last month's numbers, which were clunks, and these month's numbers that were hot, if you add them together, divide by two, you basically got the estimates of 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got adjustments, you've got all kinds of things. So it's very difficult to put a finger on that. And Carl keeps talking about if you take a year-over-year number, a significant portion of all those jobs are in healthcare or in services of education or something. And healthcare is, and his point is, like 90% of those people never touch a patient. So we're building overhead in essentially this massive area of the economy that we really, is 20% of the economy. We're counting it at 5.5 or 6 in the CPI. And, you know, where are we going with this? We've got a Fed, for whatever reason, seemingly keeping having to pour money into a system. And the economy, by everybody's stretch, is doing fine. Well, name me, one economist in the last 60 years that says you should be growing your money supply at 9% if you're not in a panic mode. I mean, what we say, it's like the two-step. What we say is not what we're doing. I mean, what are we doing here and why? I mean, I do believe that the way we've set the world up, where we don't worry about income so much anymore, we worry about wealth, that we've got ourselves in this trap. And I honestly don't think that the average person, in fact, I read some article yesterday, I hate the hell to ever say an article, it sounds dumb to me, but they were saying that the mortgage interest rate is now below the people's income, the rise in income last year. I don't know. I'm not so sure that that's a indicator of anything. Do you?
Wait, say that, Kevin, again.
He said last year, if you take a 12 over, take October, 12 month, year over year, the average wage went up 3.5%, which, by the way, I don't know where they got that number. They're saying a mortgage is now cheaper than the average wage, so that should mean that the people start building equity. I mean, I'm like, where did that come from? I don't think I've ever heard anything like that.
That does not make sense to me.
No.
Especially when you've been losing ground for so many years. Yeah. You first got to pay out of that to get back to zero.
Yeah, I wonder with the debt that's around. I don't see how people in Chicago get ahead of things.
Mm-mm.
A lot of the stuff, you know, we've been talking about Trump and so forth. A lot of people feel that he's opening up cans of worms, and a lot of his trouble, other than his mouth, are from people who don't want those cans of worms to open up. But they really do believe they call it the deep state. I don't want to go down that road, but they say it's the people in the Ukraine that he's upsetting. You know, most of the right-wing stuff I get is all the people in the... I mean, there's always George Soros, there's this guy, that guy. The people that the Democrats have planted over there that were working against Trump, and he's uncovered them. You know, I mean, really crazy stuff. But I'm not so sure it's all that crazy. I mean, I do believe that we have all these creatures all over the world working between governments.
Mm-hmm.
Has he uncovered some of them? Probably. Some of them are probably his own people, but there is a lot of stuff, I'll use the term, wrong with the world. I mean, I do believe there's an entrenched group in Washington. If somebody like Trump, but maybe better, a little more moral and so forth. I mean, if you put Solomon in Washington, the dude's going to have trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the apple carts you could bounce over. And I mean, just in my area, in the SEC, what I'd want to do with the markets, I'd run into problems. I'd say I want a competitive marketplace. Whoa, we got this covered. No, you don't. But you know the response is going to be, we got this covered.
Mm-hmm.
I'd want more competition in aircraft manufacturer. Boeing, they're not going to like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they got money in every pocket of everybody, you know, in Congress. So it's not like, you know, this is going to be an easy haul here, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Even if. I'm going to say if Trump was all we wanted him to be, this is not an easy job. He's put himself into, essentially an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know if I'd want to call it the deep state, but is there resistance to the man? Well, God, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right?
There is resistance, but I also think that this is a world that he is not familiar with. He may be familiar with doing real estate deals in New York or in Florida, but I think that the common person on the street can have a lot of ideas about how the world should work. And if I were in charge, it would be done right.
It would be
done this way. Once you get into a position of power, position of authority, there's much more information and much more nuanced decisions that have to be made. And it's not just tweeting out what comes to mind off the top of your head.
Well, bureaucracy is a bureaucracy for a reason.
That's right.
They don't want to protect
themselves.
And
it's built
themselves.
For a lot of... Well, they want to protect themselves, but there's also a history of how things were done and why. There's, you know, the reference to institutional knowledge that...
Institutional dragging your feet.
Well, institutional dragging your feet, but also institutional knowledge that we know this, we tried this before, and here's what happened. It's not that this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, but we've tried this before. It may be different this time because the last time we tried it was 10 years ago and nobody remembers it, but it failed for this reason or it worked for this reason. And that's part of the reason why bureaucracies are created and exist, that things change, but we also need to know what the history was and if this is a brand new idea.
Well, say for instance in my area, which is the only area I can really speak to as a half-assed expert, I would want to put competition back in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want firms that are getting paid to sell order flow telling people they're trading for free.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can only imagine if I, you know, plunk my behind into the SEC, which, you know, the president maybe wouldn't do, and said, these are my goals. We're going to have a competitive marketplace. We're not going to have 17 exchanges. The competition is going to be in for the order. We're not going to have anybody trading inside the penny, and we're not going to have any payment for order flow. Well, the bureaucracy would be, oh, Mr. President, we have to change this. We're going to go out with a guideline. We're going to ask for comment. We're going to go out. We're going to give people 6 months to comment, and then we're going to talk back. It'll be 4 years later, and, and I'll be leaving. And they'll, what do you mean? We've been working on it as fast as we can. They just don't want to do it. They love the two people they have or the three people they have, and they're not going. So whoever those people are have more power than the president does, and that the bureaucracy can overrule what you're doing. I mean, in terms of him sending an aircraft carrier to the Indian Ocean, he can do that. But if he wants to change a system on the aircraft carrier that doesn't work and he's tired of hearing about it, well, we got to go out for comment. We got to go out for bid. We got to. But it'll be 5 years from now, and they still haven't done what you want them to do. So I'm sure it frustrates the hell out of him because he's used to going faster on this stuff. And I think to a certain extent it's what bogs the whole system down. So I think we've become Russia in a lot of ways, and it's a frustration for him. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'd call it a deep state. They're just people that got their finger in the pie and don't want it out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, same thing in Chicago is obviously is a teaching ground for you and me. You kick these people out like a tick on a dog.
That's right.
I mean, I'm sure he's running into an amazing, and I don't know how you do them. I think one of the things that you need to do is, I mean, like Elizabeth Warren, she comes through and she has this consumer protection group. Now, does anybody really think that the consumer shouldn't be protected? The answer is no. But we'll have to talk about this when we come back. S&P futures down 1175. NASDAQ futures down 40, 50. We're leaking again this morning, just like we did last night. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Brendan Cornan. We also have Mr. Jeff Joseph, as we do every Tuesday. So we get into really good stuff from Luckbox Magazine, and there's always good stuff on there to talk about. We have AV on the board. S&P Futures down 11, NASDAQ Futures down 38. Now that we have you here, Jeff, I was kind of opining yesterday on stuff I kind of know nothing about, which is, you know, I guess you got to keep doing that if you're a host.
So you're going to double down with me?
We're going to double down with... With all the stuff that's going down with Amazon, with Trump not liking them, and you know, Microsoft, to me the shadow monopolist, and all kinds of crazy stuff. We sort of don't trust these people. We do. We don't. I'm stunned, ignorant. All of a sudden, we're gonna have this massive combination of one of these firms, essentially with the Pentagon. In this cloud stuff, and the bidding seems a little bit odd with the president not liking Amazon, obviously, and he seems to like Microsoft, and I don't know if Salesforce is big enough, or should I be nervous about them? I mean, it seems strange to me that we're going to all of a sudden hook up with this massive. I mean, it's not like they're building planes for us. We're talking about letting guys know everything we're doing in the private sector that really aren't. Maybe aren't the best actors out there. I mean, should I be concerned about this, or is that just the way we're headed?
Well, I think that's a great question. Actually, there's plenty of reasons to be concerned, but you have to parse out the different areas of concern. There's the anti-competitive behavior that Amazon has shown, both on the online retail side of the business as well as the cloud hosting business, AWS. So AWS has been equally chastised for being anti-competitive by buying up smaller cloud hosting services to eliminate competition. But when you consider that there's very little Chinese wall between those companies, there's reasons for concern. I think the bigger question is, why are there only two or three companies that can compete in the cloud? Well, there's so many questions. First of all, why doesn't the government have this capacity for cloud hosting its own servers? You would think that would be a technology over the years of development of the internet that they would be able to retain and not have to go to a private company to host their cloud activity. I think that sounds like the perfect scenario, because you have that way at least there'd be some firewalls that would prohibit the potential abuse of private data and information that's collected as a result of intelligence or just regular federal government.
Let me step back here, because I got to believe if maybe not, if I'm as ignorant in this area, the listeners have to be too. When we've had people define the cloud before, it's been Kevin O'Neill, who's been IT guy at banks and at Better World Books, and he defines it for Better World Books as they have huge spikes November. September, January, when people go to school, and all of a sudden they do 40% of the business in 1 month. That rather than having all that capability in house, he had four or five people lined up that when all of a sudden they needed extra capacity, they were already hooked up, they could go get it, they could rent what they needed, blah, blah, blah. So you don't need to have 100% of capacity for your peak hours in your place. You can get them from other people. And he said, but does anybody really care, you know, if Jeff Joseph bought an economics book for Michigan State? I mean, really? I mean, it's information that if the cloud guy wanted to go get, who cares? You know what I'm saying? Not who cares. Nobody should be stealing anybody's information. But to me, all of a sudden, now we're talking about what is the Pentagon looking to do there? Like, they have enough servers for peacetime, and if we have a war, they're going to run all their stuff through Amazon or Mike? I mean, what does their overload look like? It's not like Better World Books that in September is way busier than they are in July. What do you think we're talking about them holding there?
You're talking about the collection of intelligence data that was facilitated under the, what was the post-9/11 federal act that combined the intelligence agencies?
So we're going to store all the pictures security of all the satellites and all the other stuff up there?
Sure. All
okay. Well, I don't know. That's what I'm asking. I mean, I never thought of that, by the way. But
yeah, everything. But, you know, everything is data analysis now. And all that data is potentially, well, not potentially, is stored in the cloud. It's not stored on servers. It's not, or it's not stored on hard drives. It's all stored in the cloud. So the first
by the cloud, you mean somebody else's server?
By not on hardware.
Explain that.
On secure cloud services platforms, which, you know, offering computing power and database storage.
So not on your server, somebody else's.
But it's still
a machine, right?
Yes, but it's a scalable platform that it's basically in the internet in the cloud,
okay,
which means it's mobile, it's accessible anywhere, it's not on one hard drive. You know, it's
somewhere.
Yes, it's static and has dynamic file capability, and files can move quickly anywhere around the world.
It's better storage stuff than you normally would have in-house.
Yeah, it operates under what's called the CDN, the Content Delivery Network.
Okay.
So the first problem would be that the government doesn't have this capability, but you can understand how that's happened as Amazon's been focused on this and Microsoft for many, many years, and they've just outperformed whatever the government might have their own ability to provide scalable cloud storage. And there's been smaller companies, but they just can't compete with the likes of Amazon and Microsoft. So, yeah, there is an irony that all this data from intelligence, government operations, federal operations, including the IRS, HIPAA, healthcare, all this data has to end up in cloud servers owned by private or owned by public companies.
I don't know, as I sort of said yesterday when I did say, I mean, it's odd to me. I mean, I mentioned Maddie Weber. I said, I don't have any problem if I had $1 million, I'd have it on my dining room table and saying, Maddie, you know, go on and get the key. If you lock yourself out, here's the combination to the front door key. I know Maddie isn't going to take anything, yet it's not the same as me saying, store my $1 million up in your place and trusted him to protect it from the third guy. In other words, even though I may trust Amazon or Microsoft, how do I trust their security? I mean, or am I just being old and grumpy?
Well, we're forced to trust someone. Well, there's reasons not to trust their security because they have conflicts of interest, and in terms of their corporate revenue objectives. So that's one reason, but there's enough mistrust to go with the government's own security anyways.
Right.
I mean, we've seen enough leaks coming out of the administration, the FBI and intelligence services over the last couple of years to distrust everybody. So I think that's a high-class problem. If the only people we had to have concerns about was the likes of Amazon or Microsoft in terms of our data security, I think our own government now has, you know, shown that they're playing fast and loose with a lot of this information as well.
Why do people, I'll drop down to a much lower level. This weekend I was hacking around doing some stuff for the show. I bounce across this thing. I still, for whatever stupid reason, I still have Yahoo as my opening page. because it's the world's worst page, but it has some of the has some of the wackiest crap on there you would never get anywhere else. You know, all of a sudden they're going, here, read this article and learn how to turn your Google Maps locator off. And I'm like, what the hell is this? So of course I go to the article like the knucklehead I am. It turns out that if you have Google Maps, I don't know if it has to be open on your phone, that's a Jeff question, or if it just has to be on your phone or what it is, they store every place you've been for like the last 3 years.
That's 100% accurate. Yes.
And it, for you to turn that off, there's a way to do it, but you got to go to Google Maps and follow these instructions. But it's not in the normal Google
settings. Yes.
You got to go, but you can't turn it off.
Yes.
You can turn it down, but they'll only follow you for 18 months or 3 months. So 3 months is your lowest selection. It's like no friggin' way, yes. Ever.
That's right.
Why would anybody even dream of doing that? Let alone do it. It'll never be allowed to do it.
Because we've all done it, you know.
But nobody knows that. I won't say that. I didn't know that.
Well, that
you didn't obviously read the fine print,
right? As does anyone else, right? And even when Zuckerberg was testifying before Senate and called out on the fact that nobody ever reads these disclosures, he acknowledged that and he knows it's true. That's the case with Facebook, but that's something that Luckbox spent an entire issue on.
Yeah, so you guys had it. That's why I'm asking you.
Yeah, that's exactly true. In fact, we were trying to make that issue actionable for people who wanted to try to reduce the amount of technology in their lives and the ability to track and gather information. And the steps alone in using that exact example that you just brought up, Google Maps does track you, all of your locations, everywhere you've been.
Does Google Maps have to be open? Or
No, it has to be on your phone. It has to be installed on your phone. It's never open unless you're opening it.
Well, so, I mean, I thought maybe if you had it open and you were using it for directions, then I would guess it would store that, which is generally wherever you went. I never dreamed it did that.
That's correct. Right. It is tracking all your movements. And then we already know that Google is saving your emails with respect to your shopping habits, et cetera. So for all those good reasons, we tried to create an actionable list as to how you can eliminate this, eliminate that, and still retain some of the functionality that provides you the convenience that has, you know, enabled you to enter into this trade of privacy for convenience. But it was so complicated that we couldn't even present a simple guide to how to eliminate some of these services. So it's a huge problem, and one that, amidst all the other problems that people deal with every day, that is really understated.
Well, I guess if I'm setting up Google Maps, all right, and maybe if somebody has a search, how do I get to Grandma's, and you put Grandma's address in there, maybe I could think of some reason why if Brendan did that search before, that maybe it's easier if he kicks up the same address a second time or something to find. There might be some esoteric reason, I'm not a programmer, that I'd want to do that. Now, if he just goes to the store and back, why would anybody want to keep that information? Why is it even worth it to keep it?
Because you don't know where I've been or who I've been with.
Because they can sell that data for retargeting for advertising purposes. I remember a couple months back I told you on this show that we had recently a marketing partner of ours at Luckbox Magazine recently purchased the large video screens in the Ogilvy train terminal
really?
For advertising. No, just for advertising space.
Right.
And that part of what they offer there is retargeting. So they know exactly when those video ads run, the ones that you see when you walk in and go up the escalator. And then they are able to grab the GPS data of people walking through the terminal at that time that had a high likelihood of seeing that messaging, and then retarget them with ads on their cell phone for the rest of the day. So based on the pure proximity that you were within X amount of yards or feet, when that video screen aired and your ad was shown on a video, those people will receive for the rest of the day retargeted messages on their cell phones. If they open up a browser, they'll see that same ad adjacent to it.
Really?
Yeah, those kids. So that's
even
all
if even if there's no connection that, the, I mean, just because of their proximity
just
to the
app. Because of their proximity during that period of time. Yes.
So does Google know that I was Googling
yes.
burn phone
yes.
yesterday?
Whatever the question is, the answer is yes.
So are they
Google
afraid?
Google knows. As they said in an interview, which we quoted in the magazine, we know you don't have to have our browser open for us to already know what you're looking for. That is a quote from Sergey Brin.
What you're looking
for? We know what you're looking for before you search for it.
So they know I was searching burn phones yesterday. I was.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
so,
we all know that.
Along the same lines, what did you make of the NFL lady reporter and the boyfriend and the Fitbit? Did you hear that story?
No, I don't know that
oh,
story.
Oh, God. This is... Everybody was roaring, laughing. She and the boyfriend exchanged Fitbits, right? And somehow you can yoke these things together. So when two people are working out, you can see the other person's heart rate is yours. Somehow or another, either she's off doing a game or the boyfriend someplace.
Yes, I do know this story.
Spots his...
There's a little more activity
Yeah,
than
she
normal.
Spots at 4 in the morning, all of a sudden the guy's heartbeat go flying up.
Yes, yes, right. Well, he was missing her.
So the two ladies over at the series last night, I was telling them this story, and I said, it's all your fault. You should know that when you're messing around with somebody else's boyfriend, you got to take it easy on the guy. Mm-hmm. So the heartbeat doesn't go so... I blame the girl, and the girl's like, you're an idiot. What would possess somebody to do something like that? I don't get it. I mean, if somebody wants to look at, I don't care what anybody does. You guys can follow me around all day. I am not all that remarkable, but the fact that somebody wants to follow me makes me not want them to.
Well, that complacency alone is alarming, because that's what many of the millennials and Gen Z and Gen Xers have already said. They're willing to trade their privacy and their data for the convenience of the services. Without looking at the bigger picture, that why am I giving this away? Why am I giving you complete transparency into what was, you know, my privacy, my life? And it's that complacency that I think should change a little bit. You know, people shouldn't be so willing to offer up everything about themselves, because it's only going to be used by marketers and advertisers.
Yeah, well, that we know.
Or eventually the government.
Or crooks or somebody.
Yeah, or the government.
Or trying to prove that you did or didn't do something, which is also very dangerous.
Well, on the way in this morning, our terrific board op AV was telling me how she tried to get a credit card and somebody stole the credit card at the mail place. Now she's got like 5 credit cards that she didn't know about.
Oh, jeez.
She's not real happy with.
Yeah, that's not
Wells Fargo involved in this by any chance?
Bonus
time.
So we, what do you think? We were talking to Joel before you got here, Jeff. We've got the market the next year. We've had reports this morning. I don't want to get into the nitty gritty of it, but it basically says, if you look at the put premium a year from now, the put premium's higher than the call premium. A lot of that is interest rate generated, not necessarily directional of any sort. But there seems to be a lot of put purchases out next year. I've been privy. I think most people know that the stuff that John and Pete use on TV, because I manage some money for that group in my protected index program. I get the feeds on all the unusual activity. And a lot of people are buying stuff out February, March, April of next year. A lot of people are, buying gold options and things like that. And I don't know if people do that just because they think it's going up, or they do it some kind of a hedge. Seems like a lot of times people lose, and that stuff. I mean, you never really know what anybody, why. But what it does, if you're trading, if somebody buys, the stock's 100 and somebody buys the February 105s and drives them up, maybe I can sneak in behind him and buy the Marches and sell the Febs, because the Febs are a little too high or something. I'll try and do a spread like that. I don't ever just say, well, whoever this guy is must know something out in February, so I'm going to buy what he's buying. I mean, I very seldom do that. But it is interesting to watch people make these kinds of moves. You never really know if they're doing it as a what if, or they actually believe what they're doing. I mean, the interpretation is difficult. But there does seem to be a lot of action next year and a lot of stuff in gold. And yesterday, there was, out of the blue, there was all kinds of, even though oil didn't go anywhere, there was a lot of activity in all these little oil stocks that everybody's forgotten about. What do you suppose that's about? Is it just a one-day event or 2-day? I mean, I didn't do anything, because I like to see if it's a 2 or 3-day event before I and make a move. But does anybody really think that now out of the blue Schlumberger and all these firms are going to start going up? I mean, what possible reason could that be? I don't. They've been down so long. I mean, I guess my question is not so much market levels with you, Jeff, because with the stuff at Luckbox, are you stunned at some parts of the market have gone up, some haven't? There really hasn't been the rotation that a lot of the times, I define rotation, a lot of times in my time in the business, if you see some area take off, you see big oil stocks take off, if you bide your time, sometimes then you want to invest in some of the smaller ones and there'll be some kind of a catch-up. Mm-hmm. And you can, you know, you buy the stuff that hasn't moved, especially if it's sort of in the same industry. Or you sell the stuff that hasn't gone down yet or whatever. It seems like in this last go-around, the last 2, 3, 4 years, that's never happened. If you could have that philosophy where if you, you know, like, if you like this industry and you see 3 or 4 stocks run off and buy some of the other ones, they don't necessarily follow ever. It's different. I mean,
they follow in a proportional manner as opposed to the more dramatic sector rotation that we used to see 7 or 8 years
right.
ago. I agree completely.
Why do you suppose that is?
Back then, at that time, 7 or 8 years ago, I was developing specific ETF product for RIDEX, the mutual fund family, and I built about a dozen of their directional sector based products, some levered and some not, in both long and short. And so we had a high consciousness and awareness of sector-based ETFs. And sector rotation was, as you're noting, it was really a good strategy.
Yeah.
Because you would expect to see that, the word's escaping me, with that kind of catch-up. There was always an arbitrage play, kind of a Paris trade, that
right.
eventually sector rotation would catch up for underperforming sectors. But now I guess you can only attribute this kind of... Everything now rises on a proportionate basis, but not some sectors more than others. It's just because of the domination of the 500 index as the primary, you know, new asset purchase for most new investors, and that's where you're seeing the majority of your market gains. You know, just because there's less and less stock purchasing now. That's why it's so easy for these companies to come out a couple of weeks ago, zero commissions,
yeah.
zero commissions, equity commissions. The dirty little secret is no one's buying equities. You
right.
know? Who's buying 100 lot of Amazon? You know?
Yeah,
you know, not at these prices. It's not happening anymore. But what they are buying is $100 worth of ETFs in their 401k on a
right.
you know on a monthly basis. So with everything focused and going into the S&P 500 for the most part, that's why you're not seeing that. That sector rotation and much of that arbitrage play, that opportunistic strategy, is kind of dissipated now because it's just simply a rising tide.
Well, I had the occasion this year when I kind of hooked up with this other group because they knew I did the Protected Index program well, and they said, "Look, why don't you just do it instead of us doing it?" So I put, I'm going to say $7, $8, $10 million of money to work in a 4-week span between January and February. And, you know, which is, you know, a reasonable amount of cash. And I sat down with every one of the groups and I said, okay, there's all these different sectors. Well, I really only stick with about 5 of them because it would want to be the ones that are liquid, the ones you mentioned. Be the Russell, it'd be the QQQ, it would be the S&P, the Spider, maybe the XLE, a couple other, maybe it would be the, what's the XLV is the healthcare piece. I mean, but you need liquidity if you're going to be trading options. So somebody would say, well, no, I'd love to be in some of the oils. They've been dragging. And I think they're going to catch up, so we put some of the XLE in their place. Somebody would say, well, no, I really like the Russell because it has not performed, and for the market to go further than here, usually small tech leads, so let's do some of the Russell. Other people, nah, I like the big stuff, let's go on in QQQ. Well, here it is, 10 months later, the XLE is down, right, and in this massive year where everybody's supposed to be up 25%, Russell last week finally went like positive. It was up like a dollar a right. year. And the QQQ is up God knows how much.
Sure.
So, I mean, sort of the idea that everybody should be up 25%. Apple and Microsoft are 1,100 points in the Dow this year.
Yeah.
I mean, it really, I don't think I've ever seen it. The only other time I saw this, and this is not a prediction, the only time I ever saw this uneven was in 2000 when there were 5 stocks in the Qs that made up 48% of the. And only one of them is still one of the stocks today making up 45, and that's Microsoft, and that's recent. But the other ones, Oracle, Dell, Intel, those things are I don't know, are they even higher than they were in 2000? Maybe.
Yeah, but the underpinnings of a successful sector rotation strategy is usually based on relative value trading, and when the market doesn't look at value any longer...
Right, it's hard to.
It's hard to execute that trade. So you're identifying this dislocation, which is clearly evident, but it doesn't mean it's necessarily actionable.
No. Well, I mean, I guess you could take the... If you take the 2000... I don't want to go down that road again. If you take the 2000 history lesson, when it gets narrower and narrower and narrower, if something does break, those are the five stocks you want to jump all over.
Right.
But I'm not predicting that.
That's
but,
right.
Yeah, but clearly, those are the ones that went up. Those are the ones that are going to go down. I mean, if you go down.
Sure. Right.
And But some of this, it's almost becoming like... It's not even investing, it's behavioral science. It's not, isn't it? I mean, how many more, and let's talk about this more after the break. I love you guys opine more, but back when I was in, well, I'm in the business, but there was an idea that you wanted your stock between, what was the number? 25 and 40. We only got a minute, but so everybody can own it.
Right.
I mean, you wanted mine
and
probably.
Now
you want
1,200.
Well, now you want it
nobody
to be.
Nobody can own it.
You want it to be 50% institutionally held.
Yeah.
Or in those days, it's the last thing you wanted, because if the institutions didn't like you anymore, right. All of a sudden everybody, you wanted to be Lucent, mm-hmm. which was at one time the most widely held stock, right? GE had to be there for a while.
Sure.
I mean, and now nobody wants any part of that. You look at Amazon, I'll bet, I'll have it for maybe next week, I'll bet they're 50%. You probably know this off the top of your head. I bet they're 50% institutionally held. Mm-hmm. And if you count ETFs, it's probably 60 or 70. I mean,
sure.
And there was a time when nobody wanted that. Now, do they think now that those people are steadier hands than individuals? I don't know. I don't know where the research on that would be, but I don't have anybody in my. We got a lot of people that have Apple here. I don't think we have anybody who has 1,000 shares of Google.
Well, remember, it has a lot to do with the pricing.
Yeah, absolutely.
They just can't buy lots in that.
S&P futures down 4.25, and as we've come back, we're only down 4.25. S&P futures down 16, and we're down 12 last break. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI ProDirect. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, Nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Sam Allen. This is Jeff Joseph. We have this with Brendan Carnan in studio. We're full up. We also have AV. Just when you think not much can happen over break, we have S&P futures now up 3. Something's fun here. We're scrambling around here to find out what announcement came out. All we see is third quarter productivity, which I don't think means beans. That can't be that. NASDAQ futures now up 8. These were all the other way reasonably heavy not very long ago. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX. Well, I got it down 143. I'm guessing it's up more than that. FTSE down 55. CAC round down 21. We'll get those numbers in a minute because got a delay on those. Nikkei, no delay on these. They're closed. Nikkei down 20. Call that flat. Shanghai up 2. Call that flat. Hang Seng down 58. That's 0.2%. Bonds, we've got Japan minus 0.02. Keeps trying to go positive, but has not made it there yet. Bund minus 0.28. That's as high as we've seen there in a while. It was 0.30 yesterday, so it's creeping toward the plus, toward the break-even number. And ours is 1.82. So we're higher than we have been as well. Gold up $7 now, $14.71. Silver up $16.60, up 5 cents. AV, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, and we'll try and find out whatever tweet it is or utterance that got the market spinning here.
Good morning, everyone. It is 7:36 a.m. in Chicago. Cold and cloudy morning. Eventually, we're expecting the sun to come out. Hopefully, after 10 a.m., the highs will reach 26 and the lows will dip to 20. In Phoenix, evident sunshine, light winds throughout the day. Later at night, we'll get cloudy and slight windy. The highest will be 67 and the lowest 47. In traffic, traffic has rapidly gained its volume. We have a few accidents reported. The one is on Dendrion East before Cermak Road. Expect delays up to 10 minutes. Another one causing major delays on Dendrion East before Canalport Avenue. And one more accident on Eisenhower at Manheim Road. And overall, the traffic volume is increasing throughout the city, so be aware of some delays, especially due to the road construction throughout the city. And in sports, we have Bulls that lost to Raptors 92-93. Chief?
Yeah, and the immortal words of AV, why should I watch them? All they do is lose.
I didn't say that. You're exaggerating.
What did you say exactly?
No, you were asking, did I watch? And I said, no, why? Did they lose again?
Yes.
Yes,
it's the
they
same
did.
Thing. Sort of the same thing. Well, we think we found the culprit. Wall Street Journal came out and said that they think there's going to be a delay in the tariffs from December 15th. Now, you guys are street kind of dudes. Do you think anybody at the Wall Street Journal bought spoos before they lobbed that one out there? Just saying.
Surely you jest.
I'm shocked. You know, it's gambling in this establishment. I
hear you're winning, sir.
Yes. But that was 17 points in the spooze on that little Wall Street Journal lob.
Yeah, well, someone may have.
How many more times, Lucy, are we going to spin the market based on tariffs in, tariffs out? Is it another 100 before we put this one to bed, or 200, or what?
Well, you just referenced my favorite Zeppelin song, so I've got to venture an answer here.
Yeah.
Right. Listen, I'd go back to what we talked about a couple months ago. I mean, the tariffs don't seem to be affecting this market too much, and I think the market continues to have an upward drift until July, when the Democratic convention is over and there's a clear nominee who will suddenly be polling in national polls consistently higher than the president, and that will start to give the market worry because it seems to have favored this administration in terms of its activity thus far. And I think it's clear sailing through that. And listen, markets had so many times to really care about tariffs, and it shrugged it off every single time. It should care. Maybe it shouldn't care. Maybe the market's this very efficient price discovery mechanism that we all believe it to be, and the tariffs just don't matter right now.
Do you think that'll happen, though, that whoever the Democratic candidate has to be will start outpolling Trump?
Immediately. Well, they are right now, you know, theoretically, and any hypothetical matchup. But those are hypothetical, right? Mm-hmm. Once you put a name on it, and let's say Biden emerges as the candidate, and he'll have a 6 or 7 point, you know, lead in national polls or the RCP average, I think that greater, you know, being able to put a specific candidate in opposition to Trump will start to resonate with the market that perhaps this run is over.
Right. Despite the fact that there's another 6-8 months where the Republican arguments for maintaining Trump and reelecting Trump will be front and center, and there'll be a bully pulpit by the president too. Did you think the consolidation into one Democratic candidate will cause a blip like that?
I think,
and a market response.
Yes, I believe so, because right now the Democratic, that's a great question, I think, because the Democratic Party is so fractured right now between its centrist and left interests that it's going to take a while for that to heal.
Mm-hmm.
But once they're faced with the prospect of another 4 years, they're certainly going to rally behind their candidate. The question will be to what extent perhaps minority voters rally behind a white candidate or some of the more, you know, some of these more sub, you know, a centrist against the more socialist, you know, mm-hmm. more extreme candidate. So that will continue to be a question. But once the convention resolves itself in July and there's a clear candidate and we're headed for the main stretch, you know, into November, I think that's when the market starts stalling and feeling some weakness.
Interesting. Because I do think that because the Democratic field is so fractured right now, that it'll be hard to piece it back together to look for the so-called Obama coalition to unite different wings and different strands of the party.
Yeah.
And I do think that that a lot of what the Republicans are aiming for right now is at least a claim of total vindication when the Senate votes and does not remove Trump from office. But I think rather than the convention bringing people together on the Democratic side, I think a bigger risk for the Republicans is the fact that once the Senate trial and vote is held, that the current administration will go further off the deep end and do things to polarize the public. And even if Senate and House Republicans don't come out and say something, it'll turn off a number of people in the country.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree with you, and I would say that even if it takes some time for the Democratic Party to heal after what will be a fractured convention, and might even be a brokered convention, there's a lot of early talk about that being the case. The one thing that they can count on is that Trump will unite them.
Mm-hmm.
You know that because
I do agree with that. I do agree with that, and then it comes out to a question of voter turnout, like we saw in the 2018 election, that even though in many areas and even in some of the swing states, there was a much higher Republican turnout, there was a much greater than the Republican advantage in the Democratic side. And I think that that is united. And I think that there'll be a lesson learned from what happened in 2016 where many people had a protest vote by staying home. And I think, for example, a lot of Sanders voters in many states said, Hillary's got it made. I'm not going to vote for her. I wouldn't vote for that so-and-so because of what she did to Bernie and stole the election. So I'm going to sit home and I can't, that I will be able to say that I'm pure and I didn't vote for her. I think that that argument goes away this time. That, and I think you're right.
35 states, you might as well sit home.
Well, that's true.
The risk of Hillary raising, we were just speaking off on the break, is that a Harvard-Harris poll that came out yesterday puts Hillary as the front runner in the Democratic Party now. She's polling, according to the Washington Times, New York Post, and Washington Examiner, in a poll done by Harvard-Harris, she's polling at 21%. Against Biden at 20%. And so she is now the front runner, even though she's undeclared, according to that one very specific poll.
Well, I've been on this theme for a while, unfortunately, that if you look at, I haven't heard much from ACO lately, but if you look at even an Elizabeth Warren, the extreme left of the party, in some of the accusations they're making, they don't sound all that different than Trump early on in his campaign, basically taking a pot shot at every industry there is, right? He was gonna spank Boeing because they were charging too much for the Air Force One. He was gonna stop the F-35 contract. He was gonna rip up the pharmaceuticals because they're charging too much.
He's gonna stand up to the NRA.
Yeah, he's gonna stand up to everybody. Yeah. And it turns out the entirety of society here, and I guess maybe I'm in a unique spot to listen and make a judgment here, doesn't mean I'm right, is I get so much stuff from the extreme right and a little bit from the extreme left. It's remarkable to me how similar it is in what the problems, not the solutions necessarily, but the problems people are recognizing. And they haven't changed. It's still prescription drugs. It's still medicine. It's still, you know, are we getting any? Why are we in these wars? I mean, the problems have not. I mean, Trump hasn't done anything to solve anything since really he got there. In most people's minds, I mean, when people look at the, I don't care who you are, right or left, you look at the only thing different is if you're so, you know, sorry if this offends anybody, if you're so ignorant that you think just because you've got a Cadillac policy from some company that everybody is treated that way in our current healthcare system, I can't help you. I can't help that ignorance, because anybody who thinks that this system does not work for a lot of people is just flat out wrong, right? So for people on the other end, I got this view when Meet the Press had these four young Democrats that had just won these House seats. And unfortunately, the African-American girl had this horrible cold, because I had one at the time. She couldn't talk, so here she had her day in the sun on TV, and she... but they were all very, she was a vet. Three of the four were vets. The one guy, which I wouldn't wish that on anybody, looked just like Putin. Poor guy from Texas. But he was very articulate. And was it Margaret Brennan? She goes, well, what was your campaign? He goes, well, that's easy. We run the same campaign Trump did. Washington's all bleeped up. It's all bleeped up. That's why we want to go there and turn it around. He goes, it's the exact same message. That's still the message. Right? And when you look at a lot of what people are yelling about, now the question is, where are you going to bring back, I'm going to say, some of the Democratic Party? And I had some people on here last week. Give me a Bloomberg, who's the kid from the mayor from South Bend?
Buttigieg.
Give me a Bloomberg Buttigieg ticket, and I'm right back on the Democratic side, because that group, those two people make sense, and they're not out there. You know, doing crazy stuff. I don't know. Can the party come back a little bit? I think Biden's a non-starter. I think he is Sleepy Joe. I mean, I don't know if he ever did anything. I mean, I just was never a fan of his from the get-go. I don't see him as being, of ever having an idea, to be honest with you. I mean,
Well, you know, that's what sunk his presidential candidacy in 88, plagiarism, Joe.
Yeah. So, I mean, where this is all going, you know, I don't know. I mean, the somewhere along the line, unless the Republicans are so co-opted, that some of them secretly have to wish that Trump messes up enough to where somebody better, Romney or somebody, jumps in the primaries and then they come out with somebody else.
It's too late for that. Too many of the states have canceled the Republican primaries. There's no way that, whether it's a Mitt Romney or George Weld, or is George Weld or Steve Weld, the guy from Carolina, Steve Weld, or Joe Walsh from the North Side. Right. None of those guys are going to gain any traction in the Republican primaries, and there aren't enough of them to really challenge Trump.
Well, just as since I don't know, and you're an attorney, you're supposed to know everything like the professor on Gilligan's Island. There's two separate votes. One is for impeachment and one is for removal from office, correct?
Correct.
Now, if you're removed from office, can you run again?
Yes.
Yes.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Where does it... I get my answer. Where does it say that?
I don't have my source book with me right now, but there's no prohibition on him running that prohibits him from running for office if he is impeached and removed from office.
Really?
Really.
So my question is it an affirmation or is it blank?
I don't think there's an affirmation that says if you are impeached or removed from office that you can run again. I think it's not prohibited.
Okay, so it's a blank.
Yeah.
It's amazing when we get room full of rules, how many of them we've learned from Trump or blank.
Well, that was the way that it was designed. The whole idea was that there's a certain assumption about anybody who's elevated to the presidency will act with a certain decorum and will not abuse the system. That's why it's so vague that even for grounds of impeachment, it's for treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. It doesn't say if you shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue with a gun that you can be removed from office. It's deliberately vague to allow for power to be wielded. But that's also the same concept behind the checks and balances, that you have a legislative branch that makes the laws, and you have the judicial branch, which interprets the law, doesn't make the law, but interprets the law, and you've got the executive, which enforces and enacts the law.
Well, I'm surely no constitutional scholar. I've probably read it twice, once in high school, once in college. But I think that there's two main, basically, bleep-ups, or things they didn't see in the Constitution. One is the corporation never dies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure their feeling was, no matter, even if you two guys, as smart as you are, go in there and manage to get, you know, 50 representatives in your pocket, it's going to take you 25 years to do that. And by the way, people only live to 50, you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're, and I don't think they ever anticipated the, somebody from Carolina messing with a representative election in New Hampshire. Because how the hell could you get there by horseback?
You couldn't anticipate that. Just like, you know, when the founders put the Constitution together, they didn't say anything in the Constitution about cybersecurity.
Right.
How could you expect them to? I mean, things evolve and change over time.
Well, I read an article from some guy who actually said he was a constitutional scholar, went back to all the notes, and he said one of the biggest weaknesses in there is what you're talking about, the executive powers.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy goes, the reason for that is that everybody knew George Washington was going to be the next president, and mm-hmm. they knew what kind of a guy he was, and they assumed all presidents would be like George Washington.
Exactly. That was the anticipation,
And it hasn't happened.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask Jeff, since you were anxious to hear, I'll ask you first, can we go with a 9% increase in money supply through next November as a way to keep asset prices up without any repercussions elsewhere, inflation or otherwise? I'm going to say no, but that's just one man's vote.
That's a bit high, but, you know, the economy is, and that's something we haven't talked about, and even in a political context. I mean, look at that jobs report on Friday. I mean,
look at the one before, and average the two.
Right, but, I mean, we are seeing stunning numbers. I mean, these are kind of extraordinary numbers. So the first thing I would say is that they're not sustainable, because they rarely are. I mean, they certainly bode well for the administration from a political point of view. I mean, they're just, even when you had Jim Cramer get on and say, who is, you know, clearly not a Trump supporter, say, I've never seen numbers this strong ever. You know, I mean, there's just a lot of good momentum this economy has right now. There's no question about it. So, yeah.
And has had for a long time.
Yeah, and the contrarian in me would say it's clearly not sustainable. I don't care what the money supply is. You know, something. There's a reason that put premium is higher in March and April, I think. I think there's a good reason for it.
Why the interesting part is I look at these numbers with Carl virtually every time a report comes out, and he's more of a household number guy than an establishment number, but they're supposed to both get you to the same place at one point. And if you look at the gross numbers really going back 15 years, we've averaged 180,000, 180,000 to 85,000, 75,000 to 85,000 the entire last 4 years of the Obama administration and the first 4 years of the Trump administration. There's basically been no change whatsoever in this number every month. And in the month before this last one, the number was basically awful. Okay. Now this month, since there are two big adjustment months, October, November, it pops to the other side.
I would point two things out, though. One of them is, look, I know this isn't popularly said because then it's viewed through a political partisan lens as opposed to just the reality is. But in the same way Nancy Pelosi said that about AOC, that a glass of water could have won that district, in that same manner, regardless of who the president would be, Democrat or Republican, the day Obama walked into office and became president, considering where we were in the market
Absolutely.
For the 3 months preceded that,
without a doubt,
you were guaranteed excellent numbers in job growth and excellent numbers in market performance for the next 2 years following that.
Absolutely
because
right.
He literally came in on the bottom. There isn't a politician that wouldn't have just died to have that role. So I throw out the first 2 years of that. So that's one thing.
Absolutely.
The second thing is there's a mindset difference here. I personally spoke with, who is, by the way, still one of the nicest people I've ever met professionally, Austin Goolsbee, former
University
of Chicago, former chief economist for the Obama administration, one of the nicest guys you could possibly speak to. He told me point blank, the days of 2% growth are over. It cannot occur. That was the mindset of the Obama administration. They really believed that 2% growth was not achievable, yet we saw, and it's certainly not being achieved now on a sustainable basis. Trump was way out in front of his skis suggesting that we could maintain
6%.
3% or even 3% growth, right? And, which has clearly not been the case. But they have had flashes that showed those kind of numbers. And I think those two big differences, point to what clearly has been, you know, really strong economic numbers for the current administration, right? I mean, there's just...
I'm going to take the same argument with you. I'm going to say the same argument is you talked about the stock market. I think if you pull all the healthcare numbers out, the massive inflation in that area, and the amount of, what did Carl say last week? That something like 80% of the some huge number, might not have been 80, of the hirees in the last year and a half have been in healthcare and some, and maybe a couple, in like an education or some other service industry. And in healthcare, he goes, they're the entire elephant in the room. That's where all the money is. That's the growth. There is incredibly. It's at a point where he thinks if whoever gets elected again this time, by 2024, if something's not done, the government goes broke because the healthcare numbers are that high. And if you continue to tell people that that's not going on, that it's not really 20% of your economy, and count the inflation in there at 20% of the numbers, keep saying it's 6. I went through and did some math once. If you went back 10 years. And you counted the healthcare inflation as 20% instead of 6. Our inflation number is really more like close to 3.5. And if you use that as a deflator for your GDP, we've been in a recession for 5 years.
Right.
I mean, I'm not saying that that's the accurate way to go about it, but clearly we're not looking at one part of the, you know, we've got three walls that are up, and we're not worried about the fourth wall where water's coming in.
Yeah, I think that's true, and you know, it's something that it's been a reoccurring theme on your show because it's 100% accurate. I think what we don't speak to, though, when we speak to the fact that the healthcare inflationary numbers are grossly understated in our CPI, is that there have been discernible and sustainable decreases in living expenses among consumers in the area of retail and spend. So, you know, a lot of it has to do with Amazon, and a lot of it has to do with lower prices from internet purchases. That's really held down overall inflation. So, yes, education and healthcare is skyrocketing, but there have been offsets that have been checks against the CPI number.
I don't disagree.
Nor do I disagree with you that the CPI, that the inflation number is actually higher than what
I think. My whole theme is not that I'm trying to make things half full. I'm just saying, before you can figure out where you are, let's get all the numbers correct and look at them before we, you know, let's not skew them all over the place. And you know, one of the things, we don't have 30 seconds, but one of the nastiest thing I found, Jeff, was people's wages are so far behind in the last 20 years. Even if people get a 2% raise, it doesn't even come up against a 1% raise in inflation. The one inflation is even higher than 2% because they've been so down so long. I mean, we need people to get like a 20% raise just right to catch up.
Well, it's that time of year. So
yeah, maybe we will.
From your
S&P
lips,
futures right now up 275. NASDAQ futures 1450 as we're looking at pushing tariffs off past December 15th. That's a lousy Christmas present, tariffs on January 5th and December 15th. Thank you, guys. Good show. Thank you, AV. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.